Hello and good morning. Thank you for joining us. This is a Wellness Wednesday special all about snow machine safety. My name is Elena Tanabe. I am the producer of Wellness Wednesday here at KYUK. And I'm here in the studio with a pretty all-star team from Bethel Search and Rescue. I'm going to have us all go around, introduce ourselves, and talk about our history a little bit.
Good morning, Earl Samuelson. Been the Alaska State Trooper pilot for just a little over 34 years, retired almost 3 years ago, but still active with Bethel Search and Rescue and the Delta.
My name is Peter Achek. I'm also a member of the Bethel Search and Rescue, past president and longtime member, you know, over 30-some years.
Good morning. My name is Mark Leary. I'm a Bethel Search and Rescue member. First of all, I wanted to say how good it is to sit here with Peter and Earl again. You know, the three of us have worked together for many years on search and rescues, and we've worked through some really hard times and some real good ones.
So we have lots of important information to cover, and we'll just jump right in. What is the situation with winter travel this season, and have you ever seen anything like this?
Mark?
Why me? we're way behind, you know. We're way behind on winter. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if we've ever seen anything like this. I don't think so, you know.
This is kind of an historical very late freeze up. There are still a lot of holes up river above Bethel, and I mean serious open holes where you've got holes that are channels are completely open around the Kuitluk area below there and above there. So I've never seen so many huge holes this late in the winter. Mm-hmm. So it's the lack of snow like you see the warm weather still coming. We have a lot of overflow out there still. All the low-lying areas, as I did a kind of a survey yesterday from the air, looks like the low-lying creeks are still full of water. And then and some of the lakes that are, if you're traveling out in the tundra, with that warm weather we had and the rain, with the south wind, the water will accumulate on the north side, and then just freeze over just a little bit, that can cause a problem for a snowmobiler, and it has in the past. So if you're out there traveling on the tundra, watch out for that north end of the lake. It's a pool of water out there that's waiting for someone, and hopefully you stay away from the north side. If you're traveling on the river, overflow is still active early in the morning. Early in the morning here, so we got some oversized tides now, like you heard the weatherman. The whole Kuitluk River is full of water along the sides. The overflow is the water that accumulates on the side, and then can drain on top the river also.
Peter? How does someone manage overflow? Is it ever safe to cross? When is it not safe to cross?
It's like, from my observations, it's never safe to cross until you get out there and manually check the depth. And if I look at the river, I try to stay away from it at night. Mm-hmm. And if I can see the bottom and I can judge the just with the eye visual and the distance, all those take experience and time, and you're not going to learn it overnight. For a newcomer that's in the Delta, I'd say recommend stay away from it. We've seen vehicles where they try to cross the overflow and the whole front end disappears. And this time of year that's a whole other topic, river traffic. I'd say stay off the river now. We checked the river between the Neposkoc and Bethel the other day. I personally checked it and I found 8 to 12. The other part of my crew found 6 inches somewhere along the trail, right below Bethel. So I'd say no to vehicle traffic right now.
And a general rule of thumb for overflows, the darker it is, the deeper it is, you know.
Yes.
And open water is really dark, you know, black. Overflow is river water on top of the ice, and it has a tint to it, right? You know, like yellowish tint, and it the deeper it is, it gets darker. Like if it's really deep, it's dark brown. Don't go there.
For instance, like right in front of Joe Lomac this morning, it's starting to look pretty dark out there. Yesterday, it was like light bluish kind of color, indicating the ice underneath that water was near. But this morning, it's darker than it was. So yeah, like Earl said, you know, it's not only just on the river that we're concerned with. You know, for dangers out there. There's a lot of places on the tundra trails that are, you know, posing problems or will pose. They're dangerous places out there. Like for one, even in the middle of winter, after some cold spells, you know, we still see areas that are not safe to be traveling on. You know, like between here and tundra villages, you know, there's those certain kind of grass with a lot of air in them that don't freeze. And those in the past have, you know, created dangers and problems for travelers, you know. So, like, people nowadays, especially young folk, the older folk, you know, we're not too concerned about, you know, once in a while. But the younger folk, you know, they don't carry any tools of survival hardly anymore. You know, it's always good to have a stick or an ice pick, preferably an ice pick to carry with you as you're snow machining. So, and then people want to go from point A to point B as soon as they can, as fast as they can. But, you know, if you're going to be traveling safely, it will take time for you to stop and check the trail ahead of you if it's questionable. And pay attention, you know, to your surroundings. You know, don't be, you know, now I've traveled with some younger folk that rely on their GPS a lot, you know, to go places. And then, but your GPS will not tell you where the soft or where the dangers are. So yeah, I mean, you just have to really pay attention and, you know, check, take time to stop and check the places ahead of you when they look questionable.
Peter just reminded me, you know, every year we go into the schools and talk to the students about winter travel safety. And one of the first things I always tell the kids is, my generation, my age group, is the first completely snow machine generation. The generation before us were still in the dog team days and gradually shifted to snow machines. But those are the guys that trained my generation. And if you paid attention, they had a lot to teach you. You know, they were used to moving slow and being very observant, and they always carried what they needed because they were always camping out, you know. So a lot of good old time knowledge there.
Mm-hmm. Good to be prepared and to ask questions for elders for any topic, but especially this one. I know we just ran a story about you guys hard at work, you know, marking the open holes with the blue tape. I keep hearing blue tape. And I know that there are different colors that are significant for warnings. Can you tell our listeners what the different colors mean that you use?
If I might, yes, you know, this coloring of of our trails and danger areas, you know, came about some several years back, you know, in the early days of us getting organized, you know, we were trying to select the right colors that people would recognize, you know, readily, and also that were available. You know, we noticed that on the trail, you know, red generally means danger, or, you know, that's a universal sign. But everybody was using red to mark their trails, you know, red and amber, you know. So we selected, we met and we talked about it, and we called around and throughout the state, and we ended up with, you know, three or f- five different colors, you know, the three being main, red, white, and blue. White would mean general trail, or it's a color of a good trail. And red would mean like rough trails, slow down ahead of you, rough trails ahead. And then blue is the most important color that people should be aware of, you know, which is thin ice or open water. Now, there's two other colors that we also use once in a while, you know, which are not, you know, but those three colors are the most important, you know, but there's also the color of green, which we use sometimes, which indicate a shelter nearby. And also amber color would also indicate, you know, trail along with the white. So those are the main colors. And then, like in along some trails, especially along the coast between Hooper and Chivac, I noticed that people have also, you know, kids are going, or people are travelers are going fast, 60 miles an hour or better, and then they suddenly come across a river along the trail, and you know, very lot of accidents happen. So there, I've seen. Like before you get to the river or a ditch or something, they have two red markers, you know, not only on one side but also on the other side of the trail. So when people see that, then it's different, you know, so they slow down. So that's another way of, you know, asking people that there's some rough trails or river or something, a ditch or something ahead of them, you know, before they get there.
I'd like to talk about the blue a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, after Monday night's storm, I went to check the open holes above Bethel. I wanted to see what effect that wind was having on them, if it was tearing them open bigger. And I was also worried about the two holes that we marked on Sunday near Bethel. The willows didn't have enough time to freeze in, and I was thinking maybe they got blown over. So I went up and checked, and some of them were down, but most of them were up, and we fixed them up, and then went up to look at those other open holes. And I knew that Akiak had been marking that huge hole at the upper end of Kuskokwak Slough. So I wanted to take a look at what they did. And, yeah, they have marked it, both the bottom and top end, but they didn't have any blue. They didn't have any kind of reflectors. That stuff is expensive, those rolls of tape, you know. They're something like $300 a roll.
And, wow.
You know, a lot of the villages don't have the money. So, but, you know, hats off to them. At least they marked it. So don't always count on seeing blue. But if you do see blue, stay away. And if you see lots of willows close together, stay away from that too. We'll get up there, and we have a little bit of blue here in Bethel. We're running low ourselves, but we'll try to go up there and help out.
Good addition. So always be aware. Blue, stay away, but even if it's a cluster of willows, you know, also be aware.
Just a little bit on the blue, too, from the pilot perspective, is blue also shades out with using polarized sunglasses. So if you're out there,
or goggles.
In the evening time,
test
your goggles, because you might not see that blue. And if you're in a vicinity you're not sure of, you might want to take those off.
Mm-hmm. Good. We also recently reported on unfortunately, a fatal snow machine accident. And I just wanted to ask, you know, how can listeners prevent these accidents? And maybe if they do get an accident, what do you do?
Number one thing is don't drink and travel. Mm-hmm. And don't let other people that are drinking travel. That's the number one thing.
Just for the survival aspect of it, if you're even if you're traveling 5 to 10 miles away from your home, you should have some type of survival gear with you in case you do get into trouble. A Bic lighter, extra source of fire, extra gear, extra clothes. You might want to consider taking that with you and putting them in a waterproof pack and have it on your backpack, because if your snow machine goes down and if you happen to get out, is that what's on you is what you're going to survive with. a little Eskimo trick, our elders from the Pasquak used it, is the grass. You can, if you get out, you can't make a fire, you can stuff that grass all around you in your inner body to get the wet clothing away from your skin. I know a guy that actually survived doing that. Little tip on that, Peter?
Very important, yes. You know, like both of my, both Mark and Earl saying, always be prepared, you know, even on a short distance travel, you know, you should be prepared, you know, like, excuse me. One thing I experienced this myself, you know, that grass does work. You know, I had to put some inside of my clothes on a cold 20 below weather in the past, and that saved my life. And then one thing that you can do also is if you happen to fall into the water with your snow machine and you get out, then it's, you know, what saved me was I happened to have on my outer clothing a couple of pockets on my snowsuit, you know, that I had a screwdriver, and I was groping around because I couldn't get myself out of that ice. So I found a screwdriver, and I was able to jab onto the ice and then pull myself out of there. Later on, I found that those screwdrivers would tear into my pockets, you know, and I would lose my screwdriver, and then there goes my lifesaver. So I thought about that, and I happened to put a couple of spark plugs in my pockets, and then, hey, that's an idea. So those spark plugs that come off your snow machine, if you take the top part of that spark plug, you know, it can be a jabber into the ice. You know, carry two of those in each of your pockets, you know, so that if you need, and then the ice can get pretty slippery if it's wet. You know, that's the condition I had to pull myself out in, and there was no way I could get out. That screwdriver did save my life. Now, you know, in those life survival stores, or, you know, they do have those jabbers that you could use, that you could hang around your body or into your pockets, you know. And also, when you get out and there's fresh snow nearby, roll yourself onto the fresh snow, and that'll suck out a lot of the water out of you, or your outer clothing. And then, you know, if there's no grass, then even willows will help. You know, small willows that you can stuff between your clothes and your body. But grass is the best if you can find some grass, you know, to help you. And then next, you know, like some form of signal, the Bic lighter works, you know, and and you just think of some, because, you know, if you're near a trail, then you know, eventually maybe somebody might have. So be ready with some form of a signal, and even riding on the snow, or, you know, SOS or help or something.
Yeah, that was, oh, sorry.
And if nothing else, carry extra gloves and socks, because if you get wet, those are the first things on your body that freeze. And once those start freezing, it gets hard to keep yourself alive.
Just from the pilot aspect of it, I've looked for people for a long time, and if you're out there, and if you see an airplane, you want to move around. You don't want to stand still, because you're going to look like the environment. I've seen people stand still. They look like a stump. You got to move, walk, turn, wave a tarp or something. If you're in the trees from the air, you're going to look like a tree until it starts moving. So the whole point is to try to attract whoever's near you or above you. A fire might work. A small fire is hard to see. A smudge fire works better. If you could make a black fire out there, it'll help. And I've found people at night with a fire. I mean, a huge bonfire worked better. A flashlight works good, and a lot better than... now I see some of these guys are carrying these laser devices. They work fine when the weather's good, but if it's snowy, they don't work too well. The snow obstructs the laser beam, But a regular old flashlight, we tested it one night on a snowy day, and the flashlight just broke out really good.
Can I add to that?
Of course.
You know, about signaling, you know, if you're in distress out there and you're signaling and you have a snow machine that maybe ran out of gas, and then and you're out there in the middle of nowhere, and then, yeah, signaling would be your savior to get you back to safety. And when here's one form of signal that, you know, that we've been telling our listeners and young people about is that when you run out of gas, you know, I mean, when you're lost, you know, we find a lot of people have run out of gas. And you know, shelter is always important, you know, build some kind of some form of a shelter, and your snow machine can help with that, you know, to block if there's no trees or no, you know, nowhere to shelter in, then your snow machine can help you break some of that wind. And then to have a form of signaling handy, like even if you ran out of gas, there's still a little bit of gas on the bottom of the tank of your snow machine. And if you have some cloth or something, you can tip your snow machine over and then, you know, get some of that gas that's on, you know, at the bottom of your tank that you can get. And then you can use your spark plug off your snow machine if you don't happen to have a lighter to flare up that to get your fire going. And then one that makes a lot of black smoke, it would be your snow machine or four-wheeler seat. You can rip it off or, you know, use a knife to take that snow machine out and use some of that gas that's in your vehicle at the end of your foam, wet that little bit and get that going. It's best if you had a little shovel or put that into a ditch. Otherwise, you know, with the wind, it might burn up too fast, you know. But if it's out of the wind a little bit, that'll slow down the burning, and then that'll prolong your signaling, you know, a whole lot. And then that foam, when it gets going, it'll give out the blackest smoke you ever seen in your life. And you can smell that for years, for miles. So, you know, I just wanted to mention that.
And just a note, too, if you do get wet, you know, you got to think of the chances of survival is very minimal. You only had 10 or 15 minutes in that cold weather, then you start getting hypothermia, then the mind is not working right. You got to keep that. You got to move fast.
Can one of you walk us through the, you know, the signs of hypothermia, what you can do?
Well, I was taught the first sign of hypothermia is when you shiver. And when you're shivering, that's still your body is telling you you're cold, and your extremities will start breaking down.
Shedding clothing. That's extreme hypothermia.
Severe hypothermia, your body is telling you it starts to turn on you. It's telling you you're hot. And we found people out there where they actually took off all their clothes before they have passed. Mm-hmm. So it's not a good thing. So.
And the kind of weather we've been having lately is the worst for hypothermia, wet, half freezing, half thawing. I prefer much colder weather, you know. At least you stay dry, you know, unless you fall in. But traveling in this kind of weather we've been having, pretty hard to stay dry.
Staying dry, yeah. So important.